court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. Today, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order they are presented, they are as follows. Fayette Reyes and Mirzadal and others versus Maria Mirzadal and others from Tarrant County. Patty Patterson and others versus Planned Parenthood of Houston and Southeast Texas Incorporated, a direct appeal from Travis County. And Joe Valadan and Dolores Valadan versus Safeco Insurance Company of America, a certified question from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. In each of these three causes, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. Petitioner or appellant may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal. We'll take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and we'll conclude the arguments before lunch. These arguments are being recorded, and you may purchase a tape of the argument from the clerk of our court if you so desire. Justice Abbott is ill today, but he will participate in the deliberation and decision on these cases. Court is ready to hear arguments from petitioners in Mirzadal versus Mirzadal.
May I please the court, Mr. Randy Hall and Mr. Gary Worley with argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Hall will open.
May it please the Honorable Court, my name is Randy Hall and I represent the petitioners in this case, Fayette Mirzadal and Royal Enterprises. I could Travis Martin Marshall, I thank you for accepting the writ in this case and giving us this opportunity to appear before you. I really appreciate it. A brief recitation of the facts is important because some of the facts are in dispute, and I think the key issue in this case, at least in my mind, is foreseeability. And because of that, if you will indulge me, this involves a murder at a restaurant on August 14, 1992. The restaurant was being closed in Fort Worth, Texas, the Monte Carlo Bar and Grill. At the time, there were only two people present. The restaurant had closed at 10:30. This took place around 12 o'clock midnight. The decedent, Joseph Mirzadal, and a waiter, Sean N. Shimei, and I'll just call him waiter Sean, were closing up. And as was their custom, they went to the back door where the manager parked his car in an alley behind the restaurant. The manager would go through the back door, open it, go through it, and the waiter would close it and lock it, and then meet the manager at the front of the restaurant, give him the cash receipts, and they'd go home for the day. That was the procedure.
The cash receipts went home with...
They either went home, or sometimes they would be left on the premises to be delivered to another restaurant the next day. But in any event, if they were going to be going at that night, they would... The waiter would bring them to the front, load them up in the manager's car, and then they would go home. So
that was the day's receipt from the restaurant.
Yes, ma'am. And on this particular occasion, and this is very important, when it goes to the foreseeability issue, they go to the back door, which is a metal door. The manager, who is Joseph Mirzadal, the man who was shot, pushes the door open, steps out, and is immediately accosted by three men in ski masks with guns. One of them has an Uzi. They force him back into the restaurant and begin to beat the waiter and the manager. As they force him back into the restaurant and ask for the money, at some point in time, the manager runs. He runs to a fire escape, fire exit, on another part of the restaurant. One of the individuals chases him out through that exit. They go in the parking lot, and unfortunately, the shooter shoots the manager three times and kills him there in the parking lot. Fortunately, the fire exit door closes, the self-closing, self-locking door, it closes. The assailant cannot get back in. Two of the robbers are still in the restaurant. They panic, they run, open the back door, run out the back door, and they leave. And so the waiter is spared, he calls 911, and the police and the ambulance get there, but too late. Mr. Mirzadal, Joseph Mirzadal is dead. Now, the only evidence to me, the question is foreseeability, because in a situation like this, foreseeability goes both to duty and to proximate cause. You're going to have to kind of weigh it in both respects. And in the past, this court has looked at...
Ms. Hall, let me ask you.
Yes, sir.
You concede, though, that, in your briefing at least, that there is a duty by the employer to provide a safe place to work.
I think, yes, sir, I think that's right.
And the only issue you really raised in terms of foreseeability is on the is the causation issue.
Well, I've tried to raise it also with regard to whether or not they were even negligent. In fact, the affidavits that were filed address that too, Judge.
Goes to the breach of the duty, not to the existence of the duty.
Right, exactly. I see where you're going. Yeah, it goes to the breach of the duty and proximate cause. Right.
All right.
And so, and in that thing, what I was getting ready to say next is if you look at what summary judgment was before the court with regard to other crimes, because that seems to be something you focus on when you're looking at foreseeability, other crimes at or near the premises in a summary judgment context like this. The only evidence that you have are two affidavits, one by my client, Cy Edwards, who was the brother of the decedent, and the other one from Larry Steffler, who was a detective who investigated this killing. My client indicates there was no crime at or near the premises or at the shopping center before this death that he was ever aware of, and no one ever reported, either employees or customers ever reported any, and the management company told him there had been no crime. The other is the affidavit of Steffler, and he says on the west side of Fort Worth, after he investigated the homicide, and he began to think, you know, I'm going to see if there's any other robberies with the same type of procedure where they wait behind the restaurant for the back door to open and rush in. I'm going to see if there's any other robberies like that. And so he starts his investigation and finds there were three or four other robberies on the west side of Fort Worth, is all he says, that seemed to have the same modus operandi.
He doesn't give a time period.
He doesn't give a time. He doesn't give a space either. And
west side of Fort Worth.
West side of Fort Worth, and as was put into the summary judgment record, Fort Worth was the fourth largest metropolitan area in Texas, and this restaurant was in the southwest part of town. There is absolutely no evidence that there was crime of any type on the premises or in the shopping center where this restaurant was located.
You said in your brief, you said that this case afforded this court a chance to precisely articulate standards for the determining the foreseeability of criminal conduct and the liability of third parties.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell us, if you were to write an opinion in this case, or cases like it, what would those precise standards be?
Well, first off, I'd start with Walker versus Harris. I don't think you all have addressed it. And in that decision, you all focused on what kind of crime was committed. And you indicated that, was it foreseeable to see violent crime occurring as occurred in that case? And in Walker, you seem to hone in on the type of crime that was committed. Now, obviously, you've held in the past that when you talk about foreseeability, it's not foreseeability in the exact chain of events. It's just the foreseeability of what happens, of the general character. But in Walker, you tended to go into, a little bit more detail, violent crime. There was violent crime involved in Walker, and you said, was violent crime foreseeable, the type of violent crime that was involved in Walker? And then you held as a matter of law that it wasn't, because in Walker, the only evidence was that the area was located in a moderate to low crime area, and there had never been any assaults or rapes or murders anywhere around there. And said, so, as a matter of law, that type of violent crime wasn't foreseeable. So if you're asking me how would I draft the standards, I think you have to specify more in foreseeability the type of occurrence. Is that type of occurrence, such as violent crime when you're dealing with a murder, as opposed to just generally saying, was a criminal activity foreseeable without any further definition of that criminal activity? So to answer your question, if I was writing an opinion, I would specify, was violent crime, was this type of violent crime foreseeable? And then look to whether there were assaults or rapes or murders or something of that nature to measure foreseeability.
But doesn't Walker versus Harris go to whether or not there's a duty to provide security on premises?
It does. It does. And I think before you get to that duty, which is a question of law, I think part of your determination of that duty, you have to look at foreseeability, because, as you know, generally criminal activity is an intervening cause of
but
law.
But in this case, don't you, haven't you already conceded that the restaurant owner had a duty to provide a safe place to work? So aren't we already past the issue of whether or not there was a duty? We're simply discussing now whether there's any evidence here that that duty was breached, that there was a failure to provide a safe place to work based on the events that occurred. Isn't that where we are in the posture of this case?
Okay, I think I see where you're going, and I'm trying to give you a complete answer. I think it has to be undisputed that any restaurant owner, any premises owner, owes a duty to provide a safe place to work for its employees. That has to be undisputed. That's obviously been the law in this state. But when we talk about guarding against criminal activities, then I think the foreseeability comes in, because criminal activities usually are treated as a matter of law as an intervening cause that interrupts the negligence. But it also, it doesn't just go to proximate cause, it also goes to the duty when you're talking about providing reasonable security to prevent the type of thing that happened in this case. You know, the employees being a victim of a crime.
So providing a safe place, providing a safe place work does not necessarily include security.
I think it does. But when you're talking about security, when you're focusing on security, then you have to ask yourself, it has to be the type of security that will prevent what is known or what should have been known about criminal activity.
Security reasonable in light of the surrounding circumstances.
Exactly. But that goes to duty, though. See, that's why I'm having a little trouble answering your question, Judge Nick, because I think it does go to duty when you talk about providing security against criminal acts, because I think as part of the duty question, foreseeability comes up. I think you have to address what a reasonable, I think you all have said what a reasonably intelligent person, I think what you said in Nixon when you're talking about foreseeability, what a reasonable intelligent person would know or what they should know about the criminal activity or the thing you provide security for. And that does go into that duty question.
Here, the security is as much for the activity on the premises as the premises itself. In other words, the transporting of cash to a safe place, I suppose, would be, would there be foreseeability that that activity might have problems?
Well, I think that when you talk about foreseeability, even in transporting money, taking it out the front door to a waiting car right in front of the front door, those occasions when they did it. I still think you have to look at the history of the area. Has there been crime there? What kind of crime has been there? Because I think that's what a reasonably intelligent person, which is the standard that we use for the foreseeability, I think that's something that they would view. Okay? The fact that there have never been any burglaries or robberies here, I think, plays very, very much into that determination. But to answer your question even more broadly, I think when you're looking at this, it's the security of the patrons. You're running a restaurant in a strip shopping center. That's in a highly traveled area. And I think you have to look at that as well. I mean, you have to look at what's the security for your patrons as well as your employees. I don't think it's just one particular aspect. But again, foreseeability has got to go into that determination on what kind of duty you would have. And in my view, maybe I'm way off base here, but I really do feel like that's part of the duty question. And if it is, then you have to go back to that reasonable, intelligent person and what they would have known or should have known. And in a crime-free area such as this, at least that's all you have before you on a summary judgment record, I think that plays very much into it. And then if we take it further and say, as you said in Walker, how about violent crime, even doing it a greater definition of what talking about what you're supposed to perceive, because this was a murder, a very violent crime. It even more plays into that this was an area where a reasonable, intelligent person would not have foreseen this happen, because it never happened before.
When you use the word area, what geographic area are you talking about, and what should the standard be?
I think the duty is on us, not just inside the restaurant, but I think a reasonable area around the restaurant. And
is that a question of fact?
Well, to the extent that duty is a question of law and foreseeability is part of that determination, I think it's a question of law. On proximate cause, I think it's a question of fact.
How would the standard define a reasonable area?
Well, in my view, I think a reasonable area has to be the premises that are under your control, which in this part would be the restaurant or the sidewalk area outside the restaurant. But I even think a reasonable portion of the parking lot that's around your restaurant would also be, if you knew there was criminal activity in your parking lot in front of your restaurant, I think you'd be charged for that. I think you'd have to.
What if there was criminal activity in the strip shopping center a mile down the road? Violent criminal activity, as you describe it.
And I think then you would have to look at the proximity and the frequency. If you had one the year before, and you had a dozen that year, if you had a dozen that year, and it's right down the road, then I think arguably you could consider the organs across the street. But every time you all have looked at the question of foreseeability, you have focused on the premises themselves, such as Nixon, which was an easy call, because right there on the premises there had been a whole history of violent crime. Now, of course, in that case, the ordinance, now see my warning lights up, the ordinance defined that. Dr. Bird, quickly just throw in one other thing, one other issue I wish there was alter ego in this case. And I would just say the summary judgment evidence clearly established that there was no injustice, which is one of the elements you have to show to Pierce the corporate veil, and that there was none. That the deceived himself was an officer of the corporation, constantly involved in the daily management decisions. There was nothing done to his detriment. There was nothing deceiving him. He was an officer of the corporation and actively involved in all decisions, including security.
Mr. Hall, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
The Court of Appeals recited some facts that it did. It says the basis for saying there's alter ego liability. The briefs from the respondent have allegations of additional facts. What are those, from your position, what are the worst facts that are in the record in the case?
I'm so sure I'm